This is the 343 Podcast. I'm your host, John Pronich. Welcome to the show. When you're not training with your coach, learning the game from TV, or playing with others, go find a wall. It is the single greatest tool for developing your technique. Nothing else comes close. Claudio Reyna, one of the few quality players to survive the U.S. soccer system, shares a brief story with us. The following is an excerpt from his book, More Than Goals, The Journey from Backyard Games to World Cup Competition. Here's what Claudio had to say. I spent a lot of time hitting the ball against the side of the house when I was growing up. If my mother complained about the noise, I'd hop down the retaining wall at the end of our property to the office building parking lot. I'd use that wall, hitting the ball with both feet, seeing how long I could return the wall's passes without losing control. I found out later that so many pros spent lots of their childhood doing just that. Dennis Bergkamp, the great Dutch striker who scored and set up hundreds of goals for Ajax Amsterdam, Arsenal, and the Dutch national team, said that when he was a youth player at Ajax, they had little 3-foot-high walls. He would knock the ball against the walls for hours. Every time he hit the ball, he'd know whether it was a good touch or a bad touch. He'd do it over and over, trying to establish a rhythm. Whenever I saw Bergkamp slotting a perfectly placed ball past a goalkeeper or making a precise pass, I thought of him, practicing, against the wall. Kicking the ball against the wall was an excellent way to work on improving your weaker foot. You can back up, practice shots on goal, or move closer to the wall and work on passing, because where there's a wall, there's a teammate. You can practice trapping or work on your first touch by controlling the ball before you kick it or hit it back first time. Passing the ball against a wall from a close distance takes timing and coordination. Hit the ball faster and you've got to react faster and get your rhythm going. It almost feels like you're dancing. Practice the correct striking of the ball over and over helps it become second nature. It has to be, because in a game, a player doesn't have time to think about his form or approach. Under pressure, everything is more difficult. So mastering technique while playing on your own is the first step to being able to do it right in a game. End quote. We share Claudio's words because they are well put, but more importantly, because that is our own personal experience as well. Our personal playing experience and the experience of the players that we've directly worked with for years. And in this episode, Gary Kleiben and I discuss the benefits of training against a wall and why this should be a staple in a player's weekly individual training routine. We'll get into that conversation right after a quick message about our online coaching program. When it comes to coaching education, being able to discern what will and won't help you can be costly and confusing. The internet is flooded with so much information. There are tons of drills out there for you to watch and tons of things that you can try with your players and teams. But without the proper context and the proper guidance from a legit mentor, you are not going to get the edge that you are looking for or the results that you want. That's what the 343 Premium Coaching Education Program gets right. It's rooted in the real experiences of a master practitioner that has coached soccer right here in America. As a coach, Brian Kleiben has been able to overcome all of the obstacles and produce college-level, professional, and international-caliber players. Training just twice per week, field congestion, pay-to-play, you name it. But using the 343 framework and staying consistent with the methodology has led to tremendous success. What the 343 coaching program offers you is a look at Brian's actual work, his real art. It's all captured and delivered to you in its purest form to help you gain an advantage and become a better coach. This exclusive online program features videos of Brian mic'd up during actual training sessions with his real players and teams as they prepare for league games and tournaments. This is the only program in the country that gives you this type of authentic, behind-the-curtain look at player, team, and coach development. It's unlike anything else in this country. It cannot be replicated, and it's not theory or speculation like you'd see in a presentation or something staged like you'd get at a convention. So if you're looking for drills, we've got those. But more importantly, we have the mentorship, the proven results, and the community of ambitious coaches that you won't find anywhere else. To experience all of this, consider joining the 343 Premium Coaching Education Program. You can find all of the details at 343coaching.com. The wall is something that you and Brian have both cited as something that has been influential in, I think, your guys' childhoods as well. And as, you know, as homework assignments and things like that for the players that you guys have intimately worked with over the years. You've also mentioned and tried to highlight, you know, the best players in the world have spent some degree of time with, you know, just with themselves on a wall, and how beneficial that's been for their careers and things like that. And so maybe just a little bit about, you know, your background with using something like the wall, or what your observations have been over the, you know, over the course of the last couple of decades of, you know, how the wall has influenced the players that you've watched or that you've seen or that you've worked with.
So growing up, obviously I played soccer my whole life since I was probably 3 years of age. I never got to the level of being a professional. I kind of abandoned the sport when I was 17, went to university, tried to walk on at a Division I program, did not get selected. And at that point, you know, being the passionate hothead that I am, I kind of said, pretty much, fuck you. And I just dedicated myself to academics from that point forward, and basically played more of a, downtown LA, there's a whole bunch of Mexican games or Mexican leagues. So I would just go there and get my soccer fix from there. But growing up, yeah, at some point, I don't remember when it was, maybe it was like age 13 or so. Yeah, we lived across from a park. I would go by myself across the park. There was a, you know, big building, big structure that was adjacent to a school. And I would spend countless hours striking the ball against the wall. And this was, I don't know, 3 days, 4 days a week, maybe 5 days a week. And I noticed a marked improvement in my performance on the weekends. I got much, much better as a player. I don't think I can attribute any big jump in my quality as a player more so than that time I spent playing against the wall. It wasn't a coach. It wasn't any sort of other mentor. It was the wall that really helped me out to a great extent. So that's kind of me growing up. I mean, we can dive into a little bit of the details as to what was done against a wall. I don't think I had any particular direction as to I am going to train a particular stroke with my left or my right foot in order to be able to do X, Y, or Z in a game. It was more improvisation the entire time. And as the weeks and months went by, I would get creative with it, you know, where it's not just me with, say, my right foot, you know, pinging the ball back and forth, back and forth, back and forth randomly. You know, I would kind of set up drills for myself whereby, you know, I'd strike it against the wall at a particular velocity so that it comes back to me at a particular velocity. And then I would say my first touch needs to be to the right, and, you know, it needs to go 2 meters to the right, and then I have to be able to take just one step and then strike it again. So I create patterns, I guess is what I'm saying, John. And that sort of creativity really would make something that might seem boring very exciting. And then, of course, you challenge yourself. You know, can you do a particular pattern for a particular length of time or for a particular amount of repetitions to a certain degree of quality, yes or no? Another thing that I remember quite vividly is I would try to strike the ball within 1 meter from the right side of the building and be accurate about it. Because if I wasn't accurate, I would miss the building completely, and then the ball would go flying, you know, 20 meters behind the building. And when that happened, I would, you know, make it a sprint on my part to go and get, recover the ball, and a sprint back and start all over again. So I would work my fitness into this play time as well. Anyways, so that's just a little bit about me as I was growing up and how beneficial I felt it was.
One of the things we've talked about in another episode is the importance of spending time on your own with the ball, away from the team, away from a personal trainer, and just a way to kind of just spend personal time just with yourself, with a ball, and with the wall. And so I'm curious if you can maybe elaborate on that some more and how or why that's so important, and then how the wall kind of plays into that.
Yeah, no question. I didn't know anything about meditation growing up. As a matter of fact, I still think I know very little about meditation. The times that I've tried it, I don't know if I've really seen the benefits that everybody talks about, but I certainly grasp it, I think, from a theoretical point of view. And when I listen to or read things regarding meditation, I go back to those childhood moments where I'm spending time by myself against that damn wall for hours at a time. And I feel like I did enter a meditative state, because it's very similar to what I experience nowadays when I go running for an extended period of time. I mean, extended period of time for me is 40 minutes. It's nothing crazy. But I think around minute 20, when I really break a sweat and when I'm really kind of, I don't know, into the jog or into the run, I enter this trance-like state where all my typical problems kind of melt away, and it's just me and my breath and my suffering in a sense, and my mind gets cleared very well. And then after the run, you have this sense of euphoria, and I'm sure there's a whole bunch of chemical processes that partake in that. But if anybody's done those runs, maybe they know what I'm talking about. And I think it's a sort of meditation. And the same would happen, you know, upon reflection, when I was spending time with that goddamn wall hours at a time by myself, I feel like I was in that trance-like state. I don't know. And I feel like it was just hugely beneficial from that stance. And not to mention, you know, the commitment, discipline, the lifestyle and the habits that get formed from, you know, make it a religious sort of thing for you to go and spend time by yourself with the soccer ball.
What you're describing, like the meditative state, kind of reminds me of what's been talked about in recent years, where you're able to kind of get into a flow state. And they talk about it, you know, with writing, they talk about it with studying or reading. They specifically talk about it with sports too. And I've heard it referenced in basketball a lot of times, like a shooter will get like a hot hand, and you know, every chirp that they go down the court, they'll, you know, make, you know, shot after shot after shot. So they kind of hit that flow state. And in soccer, it's a little bit harder to do that because it's 11 players. There's who knows when you're going to get the ball again. But one of the times or one of the opportunities you have to really enter that flow state or that meditative state is just through constant repetition and hitting the ball against the wall is one great way that you can do that. Spend 10, 15, 30, 50, 60 minutes, you know, just you and in that flow state, which I think is important for development. I think it's a unique opportunity to connect with yourself. And then also with the ball too, that you can't really get in a team training session. You can't really get that with a personal trainer that's constantly interjecting with critiques or things like that. It's just different.
And then on the professional side, you know, I mentioned I never got to that level, but all the stories I've always read growing up and even to this day, I don't think there's a single professional out there. Certainly the vast majority of professionals out there all have similar like stories where they spent countless hours against the wall. So it's a tool that works, I guess is the point.
Now, one of the big critiques that's been talked about on social media, and people have written papers and they write or they make videos about it, is the fact that, well, not the fact, but their opinion is that unopposed exercises are not beneficial for young players or for players in general. And so the wall would be an example of an unopposed environment. So how would you respond to somebody that's trying to say that, you know, unopposed activities provide no value?
I don't know. My mind goes in a couple of directions. One is, are these critiques being levied upon doing unopposed training in the team training environment? Meaning, is the coach does the coach have 15 players, and is he laying out these cones and having the players go in zigzags around the cones? You know, that, because that's one thing that we can talk about, right? There's value in that, but again, it depends on the exercise. And if you're in the team training environment, you know, I've covered this many times, the coach should be doing team-like activities and not these individual, especially individual and opposed sort of things. But I don't think that's what they're talking about, right, John? I think they're talking more about, you know, outside of the club training environment. Do I have that right?
Yes.
Okay, two things again. Well, it's one thing if the unopposed activities that are happening are not really game-related versus game-related. So if you're having somebody doing some juggling exercises, while that's okay and you're making contact with the ball and you're, you know, you're developing kind of your foot sensitivity for a soccer ball, you're not getting the same sort of development doing that as if you are, you know, knocking the ball against the wall as we previously described and working on your, I don't know, 10-foot ground passing game, one-touch passing game. That's very game realistic, and that's developing you on that front versus doing some lame juggling exercise or doing some lame zigzags around the cones. So I totally think unopposed training is definitely part of the player development puzzle. It's just, what specifically are you doing? What specific activities are you doing? I think that's where the judgment needs to reside.
And it's hard for a parent to kind of figure out like what is good and what is not, because when you see, when a parent sees these different opinions on, you know, what a player should or shouldn't be doing, and there's two sides to the argument, and a parent maybe doesn't have a soccer background, that can be very confusing. And so this kind of leads into the story that we've shared before that comes from Claudio Reyna, where Claudio shared his time with the wall and how important that was for his development. And because of that, he was able, and because of all of his soccer experience as well, you know, he was able to kind of pass down what he knew or what he believed in, what helped him become a good player, to his son Gio. And Gio's gotten off to a, you know, a lightning fast and really remarkable professional career at age 17, already in Europe and doing very, very good things. So, you know, Claudio has that advantage of that background to be able to tune out all of that noise, all the arguments. But a, you know, a parent with no soccer background, I could imagine it would be pretty difficult for that. So, you know, that kind of leads us into the conversation again of, you know, how important it is to have a mentor like Claudio for a kid like Gio, but not just in their unique relationship. Like, it's important for a parent to have the proper, or to provide the proper mentorship or guidance for their player. So yeah, it just, I don't know. It's a topic that needs to be kind of discussed, and how can parents better or best navigate that world if they're looking for the right information?
That's what we're here for, man. So step number one, make sure that you have a wall nearby. And let your kid play against it. Don't get pissed off if he's making ball marks against the garage door, which I know I got yelled at quite a few times. So listen, if you have a parent that may not be a former professional and may not be a soccer person growing up, maybe they were a basketball person, a hockey person, whatever else, there's certainly a whole bunch of information online. You know, we are definitely one of those resources with a great deal of player development experience. If you look at the players that have come out of, you know, our programs and what they're currently doing, what they're going to end up doing in the future, those parents can indeed become mentors for their kids in a good way if they're just armed with the right information. And for example, I know we've talked a lot about receiving across the body on this podcast and through the website and through our coaching programs. So if you know what that is, if you know the value that that brings, then you can show your kid who may be, I don't know, 7, 10, 13 years of age, you can show them up against a wall what kind of activity can help them train receiving across the body. So at least you're guiding them into an activity that will propel the player forward and develop a fundamental skill and technique for the actual game versus, I don't know, just doing a YouTube search. Oh, look, Ronaldinho does these fancy juggling tricks. You know, you should go in the backyard and practice these fancy juggling tricks. And as Johan Cruyff famously said, and I'm paraphrasing here, you know, if you want to be one of those types of juggling guys, you know, go to the circus, which is basically saying that shit's useless to a great degree. So they need that level of discernment. It might be a little bit complicated filtering through the hundreds and thousands and countless YouTube, Instagram channels and recommendations and coaches, Twitter coaches out there. That's definitely a challenge too. But, you know, if they can hone in on a good digital mentor to guide them, then I think they'll be on a healthy track.
I really don't know where to take it from there either, to be honest.
Yeah, so I don't know. There's dozens of different ways to train and practice against the wall. And, you know, what are those dozens of good activities against the wall? Well, we're trying to compile that ourselves so we can distribute it to everybody. I mean, we can't really describe it in a non-video form here on this podcast, but they are certainly out there. You know, maybe just start exploring and see what you can find.
Just even the way that you know, the different types of ways to hit a ball, like a parent or a player might not understand, like, you know, using the inside of your foot and how you position your foot, using the laces, using the outsides, how you receive the ball. Like, these are all different things that can be worked on against a wall, where, you know, traditionally if a kid wanted to go to the park and kick the ball with the parent, you know, if the parent doesn't have the requisite skill to play pass, or, you know, to pass back and forth with their kid, it makes it a little bit more difficult. But when you can remove that parent that doesn't have that soccer background, and you replace that with a wall, well, all of a sudden the wall won't make mistakes. You know, then it's up to the player to make the necessary corrections to do those types of things. And you can do that for every type of stroke, every type of touch, all kinds of different things, which I think is pretty important.
Yep. There you go, John. And this fits into one of the five key player development components. If we want to repeat them here, let's repeat them. There's the club environment. There's the household environment, the personal training environment, the pickup game environment. And then that other last critical piece is the playing on your own component, which is what we described today.
And I think it's also the way that you described it in another conversation was that you can kind of separate those into two major components or two major categories, which was, you know, like the team environment and then the playing on your own environment, which is, you know, there's four aspects to that. So the household, the personal training, the playing on your own. What's the fourth one? I forget what it is. But anyways, when the parent becomes, or if the parent can also become, you know, the personal trainer by, you know, being the one that is able to suggest what exercises, or the correct exercises to do, when the parent becomes the, you know, part of the equation of, you know, hey, you know, did you go to the park this week to train on your own? And you know, they see the value in that. I think that that there's ways for the parent to really, really get involved in, you know, those four extra categories outside of the team training environment that, you know, maybe parents aren't sure how or what they should be doing. So if they have a better idea of that, then I think that could be very, very, very beneficial for their players.
And they need to make it part of their culture, their family culture, and their kids' culture. Some might relate this to shooting hoops. So there's a lot of people, a lot of kids that go to the park and they're fine shooting hoops on their own. And yet, you know, some might say, well, in soccer, you know, there's not a soccer culture here in the States. So nobody goes by themselves, Gary, to a wall and just kicks a ball against the wall like they do with basketball. And there is something to that. And I think the distinction there may not necessarily be that basketball is, in quotes, more popular than soccer. It's more about a reward system. If you go to the park and shoot hoops by yourself, there is a reward system. You either make the hoop and you get maybe a little dopamine rush, or you don't make it. And then it's like, oh, crap, you know, and you continue on. If you're going up and hitting the ball against the wall, there is no sort of hoop analogy. it's more subjective in nature. Did I strike it well or did I not strike it well? But if you want to maybe, or if you believe this line of thinking that I'm saying, maybe you can create yourself your own target on the wall so that you get that reward versus non-reward, a dopamine rush. And then that gets you into an addictive virtuous cycle for you to continue practicing.
I don't want to get into, or maybe we should, the culture war that's kind of in soccer, where people say we don't have soccer culture here in the United States, which I think is misguided. But with basketball and basketball culture, it's almost expected that, you know, the players should be training on their own. And in American soccer culture in general, the way that the dominating culture has kind of set up the sport, it's not expected that the individual players should be working on their own. It's actually the opposite, where it's almost expected they're getting enough out of their team training environments and that's sufficient, which is not true. But in basketball culture, you know, it's like you said, it's very common to just see a kid, you know, dribbling down the street or, you know, at the park by themselves. Or when you show up to the gym, there's usually one or two guys that are just, you know, just shooting by themselves in the gym. And you don't see that as much in traditional or you know, standard American soccer culture. So I don't know if not seeing that as often is a byproduct of, you know, what kind of how soccer is set up in this country versus how basketball is. I'm not sure. I don't know enough about basketball either to kind of really dive into that, but it's just an observation I've seen over the years.
There's something to that. Yeah. And I also think that dopamine thing, that reward mechanism is a big part of it. Cause consider the following. Yeah, you see the kids or individuals going and shooting around by themselves. But do you ever go to the park and do you see a kid or individuals working on fundamentals, like fundamental dribbling, right? Or do you see them working on fundamental footwork or things of that nature on the basketball court? Probably not. I don't think you see it very much. Everybody's shooting. Everybody's going for that little dopamine hit. Everybody thinks that that's the most important thing in the game and not the fundamentals. So if we switch back to soccer and striking a ball against the wall, you're working on fundamentals, and fundamentals aren't necessarily as fun, you know, as kicking a ball or shooting the ball at the goal, you know, and maybe you have a keeper there. That's more fun because you get that little dopamine rush if you score versus if you don't score. Everybody likes to shoot. What do kids do when they first go to the soccer field for training or for whatever, halftime at a game? They all get their balls, they all go to the goal, and they all want to shoot on goal, just like everybody wants to shoot hoops and not work on the fundamentals. So there's that commonality. And like I said before, I think the parents have a big influence here in trying to inculcate that culture of the that work ethic, that grind of working on the fundamentals and getting those repetitions in.
One way you've described it before, and I think we describe it like this in the player courses, is kids want to do the fun stuff, but I think we said the sexy stuff as well, which is, you know, just a different way to think about it, which is, I don't know if that's good or bad for kids, but, you know, scoring goals and then doing the fancy dribbling and doing the juggling moves and doing like the fun, the sexy stuff is what kids want to do. They don't want to do the fundamentals. And I think that rings true in pretty much all sports or all training. You want the big reward. You don't want to do the little details.
Yeah. Yeah. Nobody necessarily says, "Oh, wow, your first touch is amazing." You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Or that was a nice 5-yard pass.
Correct. Nice, crisp on the ground, you know, no, whatever it is, clean, well-weighted 10-yard pass. Yeah, for sure. but I can guarantee you that at the upper levels of the game, that's what the decision makers are looking at.
Can you thread a 15-yard pass between two defenders that are 2 yards apart? Can you do that perfectly every single time?
Yeah, correct. And with your hips pointed in a direction that deceives them, you know,
all kinds of little intricate details that need to be worked on. That's not the stuff that's going to come natural.
Yeah. And these are all things you work on the wall. You don't have your hips pointed to the wall while you're passing back and forth with it. Although you can do that, work on certain things, maybe have your hips facing 90 degrees to the wall so that your opponent thinks you're going in one direction, but your pass is going in another direction. All kinds of little things that you can do, for sure.
We have videos of guys like Alex Mendez and Leo Sepulveda doing that, and we have videos of them doing it in games, but also videos of them doing it in training against the wall, so people can actually see how you would do this type of thing, or what you're describing when you're talking about your hips facing different direction, but the pass is actually going to go the opposite way. So it's you know, it's something you can watch for in a game, but it'd be nice to be able to see it slowed down and kind of walk through it, which will make it a lot more simple.
Yeah, we're building that library.
Our flagship program helps coaches and trainers discern what is good for their teams and for their players. But now we've created a program for parents. Because parents, you are personal trainers too. Yep, that's right. And in order to properly mentor your player, you need to know what's good and what's not. Just like coaches, you and your player are flooded with thousands of training videos on YouTube and Instagram. But most of them are a waste of time because they aren't relevant. They don't translate to the real game. And figuring out what does and what doesn't, and why, is just flat out difficult, especially if you don't have a background in soccer to lean on. So we've taken Brian Kleiben's more than 20 years of experience working with teams and individual players, from U9 to U19, and extracted valuable lessons that can help you navigate the minefield that is American youth soccer. But this isn't just about drills. That's only a small fraction of it. And to be honest, you can get drills anywhere. What you're getting with the 343 Masterclass are the cultural lessons and an education in philosophy that other trainers and courses don't offer. It's these elements that can help you understand the landscape, read the game on and off the field, and translate everything into real development for your player. Right now, you can get on the list for the 343 Masterclass. We are currently rolling it out little by little to small groups. To reserve your spot, go to 343masterclass.com. All right, thank you for listening. Do you have a question about the topic that we covered in this episode? If so, we'd love to hear from you, and we will be answering some of your questions at the end of next week's episode. Submit your questions on Twitter or head to 343coaching.com to leave your question in the comment section. Make sure that you are subscribed to 343 FM on your favorite podcasting app. The show is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, and many more platforms. And if you're feeling super generous, we'd love it if you dropped us a 5-star rating or a review. And don't forget that you can find our entire library of podcast episodes, over 200 written articles, and our online courses that help accelerate the development of coaches and players using methods that have been proven to work here in the United States. Once again, all of that can be found at 343coaching.com. All right. Thank you so much for listening. We will catch you next time here on the 343 Podcast.